Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. Once again, we're back and just as the exact same as we were before. But we're missing a co-host this week. The great Jeremy Woodworth is missing from this episode. Stay tuned to find out why. Ashley loses something during Honest Ash. You're going to want to find out what she had to do to get it back. All that, plus some Joe Robinson corrections thrown in on top of all of it. But if I could ask you guys, hop on the Apple Podcast, the Stitcher, the whatever platform you listen to us on, drop us one of those 5-star ratings, and hey, just go out there and tell a friend. It's always appreciated. So without further ado, get strapped in, crank that volume up to 11, and get ready for one of my personal favorites, Demon Knight.
Kiddies, it's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Funny because I might have already told you this, but he texts me and he goes, "I got your Christmas card. Thanks a lot. You're a lot nicer than I am." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I try." And then I find out it's his birthday the same day he texts me, and I go, "Oh my God, Joe! I didn't know it was your birthday. Now I've got to send you a birthday card." And he goes, "Don't you do it?" And then 2 hours later, I was like, "Well, too late. I already walked to the post office. It's in the mail." He's like, "Why are you like this?" And I was like, "I don't like myself. I need you to like me because I don't." And he's like, "You make me sad." I was like, "Yeah, I hear that a lot too."
Oh, no. Well, we're not sad to have you to have you around, Ashley. We always appreciate it. I personally do at all times. And I'm glad. Welcome to Quality Time, everybody. We've started off the show with that revelation from Ashley Pontius. What a fun time. We're here. She doesn't look happy that we were rolling there. She does not look. We could do a different intro.
I've
been recording for 9 minutes.
Why would you not tell me that?
Because that's when you get, listen, I have an ear for what should be edited, right? Like all the N-words you dropped before there, they'll never make show. I will. By the way, this is the first time Ashley has been in studio. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth, and no Jeremy this week. We're going to get to him in a second, but I'm joined by the very lovely Ashley Pontius. Ashley, how are you, love?
Oh, I'm good, Daddy.
Yes, look,
I'm back.
Yeah,
I'm back.
I'm sorry. Listen, I want to apologize for making you stop doing that because it's been odd. I don't like being called Admiral. I think I've grown to love Daddy at this point, and I just need to accept that as you being you. I don't want to change you. I want you to be you.
I want to validate you though, because I was recently a guest on Paco's Got Balls. Shout out to Eric
Jolicoeur
and Stefan Shibotish. Yeah, they have two people who have the worst last names in comedy.
100%.
100%. But who are two lovely human beings, and featuring Wendy Townsend. They were wonderful. And so I brought it up with them because I was like, "Hey, daddies, how we doing?" And Wendy was like, "That is still so weird to me." So I pulled the room. Mm-hmm. I said, "Stefan, like, how do you feel?" And he goes, "I have a kid. I'm not a fan." I said, that was Eric's reasoning. And then I go to Jolicoeur and I'm like, "Hey, how do you feel? You've got kids. I assume you hate it."
Right.
And he goes, you know what? I'm not going to decide just yet. I'm going to have to hear it some more." And I was like, okay, he's the creeper in the room.
Best 2 out of 3. Let him fly.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. So. Well, that rocks. So well, shout outs to Eric Jolicoeur at being offended by the phrase daddy. I've come full circle. I don't want to be lumped in with a, listen, I'm Eric with a K, not a C. Mm-hmm. Don't have a weird French one. I'm a weird small penis Norwegian man. And I would like to say, I'm on Team Daddy now. That's where I'm at.
Team
I'm
Daddy.
There.
That's I where, like that.
That's where I'm living, and that's where I'm going to stay. Ashley.
Yes.
We do have a couple. Let's talk about Jeremy first. Jeremy sure. is MIA. I got a message from Jeremy. Now, the important thing to mention when you converse with a Jeremy Woodworth, it's not... He will send you messages that then you have to decipher yes. into English because yes. I don't know how you understood what he was saying in his first message, right? I'm going to go into Messenger right now, but Jeremy said, I'm not going to make the pod today. What we eventually figured out was that he said, I have a nosebleed that's been going since 3 a.m.,
yeah.
right? But what he typed... Let me go back here. This is what Jeremy actually sent. He said, "No, the word nosebleed was spelled N-O-S-E-V-L-E-E-D, nosebleed, like a sive, S-I-V-E, can't stop it. What does that mean? And you said, oh, it could be an irritated sinus. I was like, oh. Nice. Okay, she means nosebleed. How did you decipher that? Because I've lived my entire life with a Jeremy Woodworth rat infestation and all, and I couldn't decipher that.
So there are two skills that I've acquired to deciphering that. One is I love you, Eric, but Eric is himself a terrible speller, and I have to take a lot of time when I first
Whoa.
Met Eric.
Whoa. Whoa.
There are many times I've had to decipher what Eric was trying to say, so it's, you know, two sides of the same shitter, and so I had to figure that out. But also, I have an older sister, my oldest sister, who when she was younger struggled with mild dyslexia and is now a single mom of three. So when she is busy, she uses either voice to text or one of her children will take her phone. So I am constantly trying to understand what that bitch is saying. So it fully prepared me to deal with Jeremy Woodworth.
I have not been able to spell the word tomorrow since recently because I got embarrassed about how many times there's so many M's. I thought there was R's, multiple R's in it, and I couldn't do it, and it's drilled in my now I can type it if you ask
so
me spelling bee style. Couldn't do it. Yeah, I realize I am the dumbest, believe it or not, the dumbest person on this show.
No, not true.
Rank smartest to dumbest, you, me, and Jeremy, go.
Don't make me.
I want to hear your
I don't want to do this game.
I want to hear the game. Now you're part of the game. You're in it. You can't turn back.
I want to leave. I drove all this way to be battered.
Well, all right, listen, I'll save it for this, but I do have another topic of why you're here on top
sure.
of that. Here's my ranking, though, smartest. So I'm going to go you number one. Just in pure intelligence alone, I'm going to give it to Ashley.
Oh.
I'm going to go me solid two. But Jeremy has to be three. If you're ranking Jeremy above me, I'm going to be personally offended, and I don't think Jeremy would agree with you.
Well, right. Jeremy wouldn't agree with you. I would feel bad calling either of you the dumber one, which is why I don't want to play. You're both equally disappointing. I don't...
That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. Now, Ashley, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention why you're here in this COVID-riddled world. You're crossing state lines to be in Maryland. You're breaking laws right now.
Breaking the law.
She did sodomy the whole way here, too. I didn't want to mention that, but she did. She is here because she has to pick up a movie, which is we have put off for 3 weeks. And I'll go ahead and tease it right now. It's a movie called The Other. Now, any of our listeners who have ever seen The Other, don't mistake this. With The Others, which
right.
is a Nicole Kidman mm-hmm. movie from like the early
2000s. 2001, yeah.
Yeah, not that movie, because that's what I thought it was. He was like, Jeremy goes, nah, you haven't seen The Other? Okay. And then I was like, I haven't seen it. I don't know about it. I'm like, cool, we'll do that movie. I look online. I'm like, okay, not available to download anywhere. It's not on any streaming
Nowhere.
Service. You can't even rent this movie.
No.
It doesn't. It's from 1972. And we're going to go into it in depth for that Jeremy, I think, owns the only copy of this movie that exists because I went to go and was like, okay, well, maybe I'll buy the DVD. I'll get, you know what? I'll buy two of them. I'll send one to Ashley. Aww. I'll send one to me. And then we'll all own this movie. I mean, I go on eBay. First of all, not available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Not available anywhere. eBay was the only place I found. It was $250.
That's insane.
And I was like, I'm not paying $250
no.
for this. So Jeremy couldn't rip it. We didn't have encoding things. We didn't know how to do that. It was beyond our capabilities. So Jeremy drove it to me. I watched it this week. And now, Ashley, you are here so that I can give you the other and put it into your possession so you can let it sink into your brain for next week's episode.
It's a lot to take in the process that we've gone through to get this movie. Because really, it's mind-boggling because I've driven much further and waited much longer for much more disappointing things. So I'm curious.
I'm going to give you just a little spoiler alert. This is the most effort we've ever put into an episode. I'll say that right now. I've never put in more work to make an episode happen. And it might be the worst movie we've ever watched. I'm not going to lie to you. This movie sucks, and it's going to hurt Jeremy's feelings when we let him know how we feel about it. Well, I don't know. You know what? Ashley, I feel like I'll let you know.
You tainted me.
Jeremy loves this movie.
Cool.
Okay? And I had to call him, and after I watched it, I said, so, like, what do you like about this movie? And he was just like, is it funny at this part? And I mentioned a couple of things. He was like, nah, man, this movie's scary. Wait a minute, this movie's scary to you? First of all, this movie's rated PG, okay? It's not, this has the same rating as The Fox and the Hound. You understand?
Like,
this
is... this You're is like, not, The Fox and the Hound is scarier to me.
This movie sucks so much ass that we're doing next week.
Aww.
So tune in, because... friendships may be broken next week. Jeremy, I don't know how Jeremy's going to feel as we personally attack this movie. I might need Ashley to step in and be the moderator and be like, well, here are the good things about this one.
Yeah, I'm pretty good about that. I can find redeeming qualities. Also, I'm a little bit worried because, like, Eric, what if Jeremy dies from his nosebleed and this is the last episode we ever...
Oh my God. And then all we're doing is shitting on his favorite movie. The other is his In Memoriam. In Memoriam of Jeremy.
And then we watch it and shit on it the next week as his In Memoriam.
Remember me for this film that I made you watch. It is my gift to you.
Oh, well, Jeremy, we're sorry you're not here. We wish you a speedy recovery. And I'm sure I will find something to like about this movie. I will not let Eric sway me like he does with literally everything else.
That is true. I am a swayer of things. I do have a couple, though, of Joe Robinson's corrections.
Hey, Joe Robinson.
So Joe Robinson apparently had a lot of problems with our last episode. This is going back to not Jack Frost, but The Lodge, I believe. I believe this is The Lodge.
It would be
episode.
The Lodge, because we haven't released. Yeah.
We record in advance. Spoiler alert, fucking losers. This is in reference to my song, The Glory Hole, which debuted two episodes ago.
Yeah.
He goes, what is, quote unquote, an all-male rest stop? And then I responded back, where the gay sex happens, mm-hmm. duh. And he goes, there's no such thing as an all-male rest stop. I was like, fair enough. I said, and I responded back, are you challenging the integrity of my glory hole song? Wow.
He's really frustrated.
So, it also worth mentioning that Jeremy also challenged Joe Robinson to a game of Dig Dug. Right,
that is correct. Yeah,
he said he answered your challenge. I haven't heard a response to that yet, but I think Joe is a little bit scared to challenge Jeremy and Dig Dug, because if you don't know this, Ashley, little thing about Jeremy Woodworth, there is a website called Twin Galaxies. Now, Twin Galaxies is the official record holder for like arcade games, and
okay.
like they hold like Guinness. They're basically the, for all intents and purposes, the official record keepers of like high scores for video games.
Gotcha.
Mostly retro games, but I think they do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeremy has a number two world ranking in the game Dig Dug for PlayStation 2. Now,
really?
Now listen, it's for PlayStation 2. It's not the stand-up arcade version.
Yeah, so.
Because what you have to do is, like, when you... It's crazy. Like a Twin Galaxies thing, what you have to do is you have to film it with a camera. Mm-hmm. You playing it with your hands in the thing.
Yeah.
And you also have to let... You have to open up your machine and let them see the parts inside to make sure it's not modded or anything like that. And to do that with an arcade machine, you have to actually own the real arcade machine or be like have somebody who will let you take apart their thing. Like you have to go to Crabtown, I need to film the insides of this so I can set
crazy.
A thing for Twin Galaxies. So Jeremy does own a number two world record in Dig Dug, but it's for PlayStation 2. So
that's still amazing.
Hey, when I said that, Joe said nothing back yet. Now he might, after hearing this, saying, I'll still fucking stick a broomstick up Jeremy's ass in Dig Dug, but I need to mention it because now I want it to be a thing that Joe plays him in Dig Dug at this point.
I know, but I mean, any real self-respecting man is going to look at Jeremy's skill and be like, nah, I don't have it.
So there was also another thing about that episode that Joe had a problem with, okay? Now, he says there's a huge hole in your glory hole song. When we were riffing and doing the Morgan Freeman Shawshank Redemption and the glory hole part, he goes, Morgan Freeman doesn't get a postcard at the very end of Shawshank. He gets the postcard, then he gets his parole hearing, then he gets released, then he goes to work, and then he asks his boss if he can make water, then he goes to get the box, then he heads to Fort Hancock, Texas, where he meets Andy Dufresne on a beach in Mexico. He plays Fast and Loose. He says, I think this is in reference to you. He said, you play it very fast and loose at the very end. By saying that's the very end when he gets the postcard, he's saying there's 15 more minutes of the movie that you've just glossed over.
Hey, Joe, guess what? I want my Christmas card and the birthday card back.
And the last Joe Robinson correction, he says, Jeremy calls NYPD blue New York blue. And he just wanted to throw that one in there, too. So that was all.
Well, thank you, Joe.
That was all my Joe Robinson's corrections right there. Joe, answer the call. Answer the challenge to Dig Dug. I'm saying I know Crabtown has it. I know it's in your neck of the woods. Jeremy's ready to make a road game. I've trained him. I'm going to be his manager. You know what? I'm going to speak up for Jeremy. He's dying of a nosebleed right now. If he lives, and that's a big if because it's funny. I'll get back to Jeremy living. If he lives, he will challenge. I need a trip to Crabtown. I'd like to film the event, and we'll see how it all shakes out. Now, it's funny that I mentioned Jeremy living because we were talking about with some of the Die Laughing people some of Jeremy's health problems because they're serious, and they were like, "Do you ever worry about Jeremy like doing that?" I was like, "I don't think Jeremy can die." I've gotten to a point now where I think he has transcended his health problems, that his body, because he's treated his body so poorly, I think he could bathe in toxic waste and be like, I'm fucking fine.
He just evolves into something else.
He's so tough.
He could be the next toxic Avengers. Forget Peter Dinklage. He could be the next Toxie.
Yes, exactly. So that's Jeremy's gonna live forever, and that'll be funny if he dies and this is the episode that comes out after his death. This will be a
Jeremy.
Bad one.
Just know that if you die, we're totally burning down your house. We're not gonna get anything out of it.
That is true.
Yeah.
No, that rat infested den is going up in heap. We're gonna treat Jeremy's death like the end of Gilbert Grape.
Like, you know what? And I'm sorry. I know she's a lovely woman, but we're not even gonna let your wife out of the house. Like,
no, she burns with you.
we can't refurbish her for someone else. Like, we just gotta get rid of everything. The dogs smell like barbecue. Like, it's just all gotta go.
Now, well, the best we'll do is, as your house is burning, we'll stick her out on the curb with a sign that says lightly used. Nobody
free to a good home. And when the fire department shows up, we're like, I wouldn't put it out, but if you need to, there's a pool. There's a pool out back. You can drain.
Oh, that's good stuff. Are we ready for some honest ash at this point?
Sure, let's go.
Here
for
we
it.
Go. Oh, and it's about that time again for another segment of Honest Ash. And here's Ashley Pontius.
listeners. It's Ashley. I wanted to let you know that I once left a tampon inside me before I had sex, and I forgot.
Oh my god!
And the guy shot it into my cervix, and it took me 16 hours to get it out. And when I finally got it out, I shot it off the backboard like Kobe. This has been Honest Ash.
Another segment of Honest Ash with Ashley Pontius. I'm terrified. Ashley, no.
No, here's the deal. Here's the backstory. So
Yes, please go more in depth about
this. No, so here's the deal. So I was having a one-night stand. I told the guy, hey, I'm like at the end of my cycle. So, like, is that a big deal? And he's like, nah, I don't give a shit. I'm European. We're not stupid like American men. So before he gets there, I obviously still have a light tampon in. Just gotta soak up the excess juices. And I forgot while I'm making out with him, getting hot and heavy. I just forget that it's in there because, like, I'm not paying attention to it. And by the way, huge penis.
Oh, no.
Huge dick. One of the biggest I've ever had. And then he's like, you get on top. And I was like, okay, he's for real.
No.
So this skinny, you know, 6'5" white boy is just deep dicking me like it's nobody's business. And again, I'm just like, he's huge. He's huge. This is amazing. And then the minute he gets off me and he lit up a cigarette, I went, I'll be right back. And I remembered, and I run to the bathroom, and I like start to like, my fingers are in there, and I feel like a string. And I'm like, no. And I can't get it out. So I go out.
You go back and you're like, hey, do you have another one of those long penises we can use like a chopstick?
You're close. So I go, that was great. He's like, yeah, it was. Thanks. And I was like, so funny story. I forgot there was a tampon inside me.
Oh,
You have long fingers. Would you do me a favor and fish it out? And he goes, no, I gotta go. And he left me there. He left me there to get it out myself, and I couldn't reach it. So then I made a long distance phone call to my homies back in New Zealand. Shout out the Kiwis. And I go, hey, you're a sexual health nurse. What do I do?
No.
And she's like, well, you essentially need to fist yourself to get it out. So I like fist myself to get to the tampon. And then as soon as like I give up and I'm like, I'm going to try something else before I go to the doctor, my friend goes, would you be mad? I've been recording this. Can I put this on our show on Z104 in New Zealand called Body Bits and Naughty Tips? And I was like, go for it. I don't even care. Go for it. And they did.
Oh my gosh.
So shout out New Zealand Radio Z104.
Tell me you have it in a jar pickled somewhere at this point.
Because when I got it out, the victory, by the way, I was completely naked. For some reason, I felt the need to take off my clothes.
Listen, of all the things to be naked for, it's fishing the fucking tampon that's up in your fucking lower colon at this point.
I felt like Mike Tyson just beating the shit out of my pussy to get this thing out. And then the minute I grasped it, I was like, yes, took it out, backboard it off the toilet, like into the toilet. And I was like, yes.
Oh, no.
And I just flushed. Oh. And I walked out of the bathroom and I was like, what's up, motherfuckers? Like, I did that. Yeah, not proud, but I'm proud I got it out.
All right. Well, yeah. Ashley, you've both horrified our listeners once again. That's another.
There's more. There's always more.
I don't doubt that. Yeah. There's not one part of this that I doubt at all.
How am I still single?
Should we get into tonight's movie though? Ashley, this is my pick for it's my birthday week when we're recording this, so I got to make the pick this week. A lot of times I try to defer to both of you unless I have a vision. Like,
I
realize I took all of October. I was like, we're gonna do as many Halloween movies as we can, and in retrospect, it was more than my psyche could handle. I still haven't recovered from watching that much Halloween.
Yeah.
But tonight, we are going over a movie that, frankly, I fucking love. It is one that I remember seeing in the movie theater years and years ago. And it is... Oh, 1995's Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, which is just what a goddamn gem of a movie this is. Probably the best Tales from the Crypt property, I will say, that exists out there. Mm-hmm. I love the show. Don't get me wrong. There's lots of good episodes of the show. Mm-hmm. I own them on DVD. They're upstairs, and I haven't even finished the whole collection. I just throw it on from time to time, and I'm like, cool. I'm going to watch some Billy Zane. Let's do this. I do love the one where... I forget who's in it. I think it's Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci is my favorite episode of Tales from the Crypt, where he gets, he's dating two twin girls that eventually cut him in half with a chainsaw because they can't share him.
So this might be I hope it's not a bad revelation for Eric. I've actually never watched any of the Tales from the Crypt.
Fuck you haven't. The fuck?
Because Eric always needs to understand, though, that Eric is several years older than me.
I am a 37-year-old man by the time you're listening to this, and you are a virile 28-year-old yourself. So.
Yeah. No, but I just need Eric to understand that, like, there is, like, an age difference to where Eric would have been watching these, and unfortunately, I would have been too young to watch them on their first runs and when they were originally out. I also had incredibly religious parents that even if I had been a little bit older, they would have been like, Jesus does not approve. So, Eric, I'm stating here now, I would watch them with you.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah. I'm Dave. Hey, maybe I'll send you with a couple of Tales from the Crypt DVDs.
I'll send you
away because I have six of them. I'd be happy to give you the ones I've already watched from the collection so that you can... Because, listen, the first episodes, there's some bangers and there's some not great ones.
Oh, of course. I mean, I always loved, what was it, like Tales from the Dark Side, which is all sort of similar to in different ways.
I think Tales from the Crypt is probably... As a whole run, my favorite anthology series.
Okay.
It is good. Now, I mean, Twilight Zone is really good. Don't get me wrong. Twilight Zone is really good. It's iconic.
Well, of course.
Good.
But I mean, would you say I'm under the impression that Tales from the Dark Side is kind of like a middle area between Twilight Zone and Tales from the Crypt, that it can be campy, it can be a little more fun, but it definitely has a very serious, darker side for sure.
It does. Tales from the Dark Side's a little bit more serious. I think Tales from the Crypt, the thing that sets it apart from like the Twilight Zone or Tales from the Dark Side, is it actually it's in the same place that one of my other favorite anthologies is Creepshow.
Oh, it's, agreed. It's I a love little Creepshow.
Bit, it's a little bit more tongue in cheek, and it's like you don't necessarily feel bad for the things that are happening to people in the movie.
Agreed.
You're like you get it's a little bit comic booky.
Yes,
and Tales from the Crypt is very much like that. It fits right in that, and you hear it. Right in our intro, Mr. John Kassir, who is the voice of the Crypt Keeper, does our intro every week. You hear him week in, week out. This movie is, though, was actually filmed in 1989 and didn't come out until 1995, which is pretty wild because they filmed it in between seasons of Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, wow.
And that was an all-star cast, to say the least. Obviously, you have John Kassir, who really is only known for the voice of the Crypt Keeper. Mm-hmm. But you have Billy Zane, who plays the Collector, who is, I'll say this, and this isn't just me saying this. This is also Billy Zane himself. He thinks this is his best performance he's ever put on screen. And I will agree with that, because I think this is the strongest Billy Zane you'll ever see.
I mean, I guess that's probably fair. It's so hard, because I obviously would have first seen him at my age. In Titanic, where he was such a fucking piece of shit. That seems to be kind of his hot spot.
He is a big piece of shit. Hey, guess what? I'll give you I'll throw out a number here. Well, I need you to throw me a number out here. You know, Billy Zane is on Cameo. Do you know how much a Cameo from Billy Zane costs?
Okay, well, I'm trying to remember. Are we, because it's one way or the other, are we talking insanely high for his appeal, or are we talking pretty cheap?
Just, like, what would you pay for a Cameo from Billy Zane?
Me, personally?
Yeah, let's just throw it out. What do you think the market value for a Billy Zane is?
Here's what I'll do. I'll say what I would pay, and then I'll tell you what I think he's charging.
Okay, well, I'll take both of those.
A cameo from Billy Zane, if I was a fan in any way, shape, or form, I'll say maybe $150, maybe $200.
Okay.
Okay, I'm betting you he's probably charging $5,000 a cameo.
$5,000. So $5,000 is what you think it really is.
Yeah.
But you would be willing to pay $150.
Yeah.
You've left a very large gap think it is.
Here's the thing. Not to hurt Billy Zane's feelings, I know he listens to the podcast, my value of Billy's need to say happy birthday is incredibly low. I feel like Billy thinks he's, you know, much more important. So that's where the disparity is.
I see where you're saying there. So you're not far off, but you are far off on your high guess. It's not $5,000,
okay.
But he is charging $500 a cameo.
Okay.
Currently.
So I okay. Yeah, all right.
For 30 seconds of a personalized message from Billy Zane. Now I will say Billy Zane's cameo, if you look at his previews, they're pretty fucking good.
Oh.
I'm not gonna lie. He takes it. You get your $500 worth,
okay.
Because like they'll be like they'll say, "Hey, can you say that line from this?" And he'll be like, "Yes." And your friend wanted me to say, "Why don't you just do that?" And he'll say his famous line. He's like, "But I'm not gonna fucking do that." Okay, but he still said it. You understand?
Yeah.
So he has a lot of fun, and he'll shit on your friends for you.
Oh.
It's great. He actually does have a good time.
Are you
it.
Telling me we need to scrape together $500 and pay him to do a cameo for us?
I don't know. Listen, we're gonna need you guys to buy some more merch. Head to ericcomedy.com. Go to the Quality Store Emporium. Buy yourself some threads. Shout out Jeff Hancock, who now owns not only the Gator but also the T-shirt for Quality Time. So right there, you could get us $3 close. Closer to fucking getting a Billy Zane cameo. Anyway, but also still a very solid star-studded cast. William Sadler plays Breaker. He's probably most well known for, I think, the Shawshank Redemption. He's one of the guys in the Shawshank.
Yeah, you're right. I totally blinked on that. You're right. Yeah.
There's also a strongest chin in the B movie game outside of a Bruce Campbell. Okay.
Yeah.
Very strong chin. Also stars Jada Pinkett Smith.
Yes.
Before she was really anything. I mean, 1995. Yeah. She hadn't really done like a ton of stuff yet.
No.
So it was kind of a breakout role for her here.
And can I say, always insanely good looking.
Like, yes.
Always exactly. Hot, always pretty.
We also get a Thomas Hayden Church, who's already been in the show Wings by this time. So he's a big fucking deal. And you are fucking, I just put a towel underneath Ashley because she can't handle a Thomas Hayden Church.
I think he is so hot. Like his younger years, I think he is so insanely hot. I think he at times was an underrated actor when he was younger, and he's got that deep voice. Like he's it's caveman like.
I feel like Thomas Hayden Church missed the mark when he didn't get the role of Putty on Seinfeld, because he could have played that role just as well as that guy.
That's actually I agree with
I'm
that.
I'm Thomas Hayden Church.
Well, but you know what? Everybody always forgets this. I think this would have been one of the Tobey Maguire. I think it would have been Spider-Man 2, 3. He plays Sandman.
He does play Sandman in a Spider-Man 3. That is correct.
He needs to, I'm just putting it out there, he should be in the other Marvel movies. I'm just saying.
Probably, and I'll say it, the worst Sam Raimi movie out there, Spider-Man 3.
But you gotta understand, I'm younger than you. I was an emo kid, and I was like, this makes sense. I'm playing Dashboard Confessional. Like, I remember when I was like, they've got Dashboard Confessional in this movie.
I don't hate Spider-Man 3 because it is a Sam Raimi movie.
It is a terrible movie.
But I love, the most hated part is evil Peter Parker, where he's
emo, and
he's like walking around. I was just like, what? That's what you don't understand. That's how Peter Parker would be if he was a douchebag. He would be an emo kid walking around being a fucking loser, listening to Dashboard, having Yellow Card's discography, right? Like, that's how he would live.
Yeah, it just burns into your memory that I'm like, oh, is that why I date terrible guys who would steal my jeans? Like, is that what this is?
So, couple other notable actors and actresses in this. CCH Pounder is in this. I know her best from other than having a hilarious name.
I'm sorry.
cock hard pounder, as I like to call her. But she plays Irene. I loved her in the show The Shield, which is fucking starred, obviously, Michael Chiklis as Thick Mackie, because that fucking donk and donk on that motherfucker is tight. And she's a pretty decent actress, and a character who's recurred on many episodes of Quality Time, going back to Gremlins, and as most recently The Howling. One Dick Miller, who plays the best goddamn drunk in the biz.
I love and Dick Miller.
This movie, he plays his drunkest character yet.
Yeah, you know what's funny? My first introduction to Dick Miller was actually not Gremlins, though I know that is for a lot of people. Mine was actually The Burbs. He plays the garbage man in The Burbs, and they're so likable. I love him.
I do. So, this movie kicks off into high gear with a topless woman after a grisly murder. She's killed her lover and put him in an acid bath and is now taking a wonderful topless bath in her bathtub. And the body that she put in this acid bath comes up the stairs with a hatchet in hand and goes to fucking chop her in half when all of a sudden...
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do call it acting.
Well, let me tell you something, pal. You're no Gory Cooper. You ain't even a Robert Redford. Another take like that, and it'll be back to bit parts for you, and I won't say what bits I'm talking about. All right, everybody.
It's important to mention this part. Now, in the show Tales from the Crypt, the Crypt Keeper is always like this puppet that moves around.
Yeah.
It is very unsettling in the intro to this movie to see the Crypt Keeper as an actual person that is walking around and has a Crypt Keeper puppet head imposed on his head.
Yeah.
It doesn't look right. It makes it feel weird.
Yeah.
And the axe murderer, who's dripping with goo, whose face is actually just completely normal when they... yell cut cut cut, I forget the actor's name, but he's from the show Night Court, I believe. One of the main characters in Night Court. I
know him
for the
because
life of me.
He was the bad guy in Richie Rich.
Yes he is the bad guy in Richie Rich as well. Dead not found
And then he was also in an episode of Parks and Rec whenever Leslie decides to try and find her mom's old long lost love and he turns out to be crazy. It's that guy. He's great. I love at the beginning of the movie, though, if I'm not mistaken, you know, so we're doing like this fake scene before we get into the movie. And I love that this girl is totally topless. Obviously, why Eric loves this movie. But she's like yes. fondling herself. And I think she's on the phone, right? Because she's talking to somebody.
Correct.
And she describes herself as feeling, quote, hot and squishy.
Yeah.
And I made a note that I was like, wow, I have also described my state of arousal as hot and squishy. She gets it. Like, oh man, I've never met anybody else who also like would be having phone sex. And I'm like, oh, I'm so hot and squishy. Ugh.
So the Crypt Keeper then goes and, as most episodes of Tales from the Crypt, introduces us to his story he's telling us tonight.
Reset!
Reset, guys. Back to one.
Director.
Give and I... You're Hollywood in a big way. Can't you see what I've been working on? So if you're ready, creeps... Fasten your drool cups and hold on to your vomit bags. We're going to the movies! Frights, camera! Action! I call this one Demon Night.
Listen, if you start a movie with filters, hey man, nice shot. I'm in fully from beginning to end. It starts with our hero, William Sadler, driving down the road as he's being chased by the collector, Billy Zane. There is a bit of a gun shootout, mm-hmm. and Billy Zane then tries to take his fucking car and ram it into him. Luckily, Breaker, played by William Sadler, is able to escape right before it crashes in there and continues on foot into town. Nice opening sequence, some action that happens right out of the bat. I like it. Listen, I love the song "Hey Man, Nice Shot," which is, are you familiar with the song "Hey Man, Nice Shot" at
I'm
all?
Not.
So it was the song that was just playing there, and it is in reference to the guy who shot John Lennon, because that was John Lennon's last words were, "Oh, hey man, nice shot," like that after he shoots him.
Oh wow! So, you teach me stuff every time I talk to you. I did not know that. No, my first thought watching this opening scene was, I don't understand what's happening. There's just not a lot of explanation as to, like, why are these guys dating each other? Who's the bad guy? Who's the good guy? I was very perplexed, but I had fun nonetheless.
So, Breaker then flees to a local coffee shop where he tries to steal a car in the dead of night. And as he's doing it, one of these fucking kids, this kid Danny, goes and fucks his whole time up.
What you doing, mister? Are you stealing my daddy's car?
Stealing? No, I was testing the lock. Seems to be working just fine. Hey, kid, you want a quarter? How about a shiny new quarter? You want one? Come on.
Dad, there's a guy outside stealing your car!
I do have to point out, by the way, that restaurant is called the Halfway House Cafe, which is really, really classy, because not only is the food great, but you can OD in the bathroom.
So he calls for his dad, and then all of a sudden you see Thomas Hayden Church and the boy's parents run out to go check who it is. He's like, he's gone, damn it. He's gone. Because you'll see Thomas Hayden Church plays a character called Roach, who is the cook there and is a real piece of shit that we'll get into more.
I just put it together. Like, I definitely want a man who goes by Roach to be cooking my food.
Exactly. So he then flees on foot and then runs into the best drunk acting fucking actor in the world, Dick Miller, who's playing Uncle Willie. They share a bit of a drink, and he's going to show him a place to crash for the night. Now, meanwhile, the cops show up at the wreckage, and it's important to note that there was one of the plates, there was a Maryland tagged plate that was stolen. Yeah. I wanted to point that out. When all of a sudden our cowboy, Billy Zane, who clearly crashed into this wreckage, shows up next to it completely unscathed.
Holy shit. Hey, mister! Get away from that! Where the hell you come from?
This is my car.
It was my car. Did you see him? Walking into town, the guy I was chasing? Airbags, gotta love him. Did you see him?
Well, we didn't see anybody.
Now, wait a minute. Are you telling me that guy over there walked out of here, too?
Hey, where the hell you going? You got a few questions to answer.
All right, look, officers. Man, I'm chasing now, he's dangerous. If he's in your town, you got a problem. Now, we stand here arguing about a traffic accident. Do you mind? Something awful's about to go down over there.
Is that where we're going?
And it switches to William Sadler and Uncle Willie heading to a hotel that was formerly a church that they are then going to go set up in, and he's looking for shelter for the night. Now, We get to see William Sadler's hand. He has a bunch of stars that are starting to star tattoos that are moving from place to place on his hand, and we meet the owner and proprietor of this place. Her name is Irene, played by CCH Pounder. She rents him a room. Jada Pinkett Smith is also introduced, who plays Geraldine. Shows him his room. There's some nice little rapport there that you can tell, like, this is going to be a friend in here. Geraldine and Breaker break the tension with that. We also meet Cordelia, who and Wally, who Cordelia is the whore that just lives at the fucking hotel, and she fucks people for money. And then Wally, who is clearly the cuck who has never afforded enough to fuck Cordelia, but clearly has eyes for her, and has just lost his job at the post office.
Yeah, he's the original simp. I'm a
OS.
Yeah, the OS, original simp. Yeah, he is absolutely pathetic. And I got to be honest, I was a little aroused.
I like him.
I love him weak. Like, he has no spine. Get me his number.
So this spineless fucking cuck Wally is there, and here's a fun fact. Two of the actors that we've now introduced up until this point were in a very, very famous big budget movie from the 80s. Big budget movie from the 80s, and they've been reunited in the 90s in this film. Can you, I will even give you the two actors. One is Billy Zane, and one is the actor who plays Wally, who is, his name is, if I can find it here, Uncle Willie, nope. Charles Fleischer, who plays Wally.
Okay.
Charles Fleischer and Billy Zane were in another big budget movie from the 80s. Can you guess that movie?
Oh, man.
And it's a movie, I guarantee you, I don't know if you've seen it, but I'm 99% sure you've seen this movie. Most people in the United States have seen it. It is in constant syndication. It's a very famous film.
I just never notice Billy Zane in anything.
He's not a big role, and neither is Charles Fleischer. I'll let you know. They're not big roles in the film I'm talking about.
You said 80s release?
It's an 80s movie. I'll give you even more hint. There was three movies of it.
Oh.
So it was a trilogy.
Wait, what year did The Godfather come out?
It is not The Godfather. It is not The Godfather.
Because I've never seen The Godfather. Three of them?
There's three
of
them.
No, wait. Was it made as a trilogy, or did they just happen to make sequels?
I think it was made as a trilogy. I will say the third one is not as strong, but is still very well known.
All I'm thinking is Back to the Future.
Well, I'm just going to tell you right now, you are completely correct. It is Back to the Future.
Oh, the third one.
Yes.
Oh, all, God, I hate
no, no, no. They're in Back to the, all, both of them are
what?
Back to the Future 2. They're Back to the Future 1 and 2. They are Biff's henchmen in 1950.
No way.
Yes,
I
Billy
need to go
Zane
back and rewatch. I
there
never noticed. Wow.
There you go.
Wow, The Godfather was my first choice. I'm pretty disappointed in myself, if I'm being honest.
Hey, you fucking nailed it though. That was good. You
I needed a lot. I needed
did.
A lot of help on that one. I'm not gonna lie.
So now the cops are kind of fascinated by this man that we only know as the collector, as he charms them with pleasantries in the rear of the cop car. Thomas Hayden Church, who plays Roach, shows up to go fuck Cordelia. That's his main bitch. And Wally is sad, and she mentions, he's like, maybe Wally could use a freebie. Which is
honestly
that's a nice thing to do if you're a whore. That's your livelihood. You're a sex worker in there. Give one on the house.
I understand the thought process, because I once gave another comedian a blowjob because it was their birthday and I felt bad. I was like, oh, you had a bad show. And I was like, let's go behind the cellar door. and afterwards I was like, oh, okay, like, that's cool. And they're like, you don't want anything? And I was like, no, I, you know, happy birthday. Just, I'm not buying you anything else.
So Irene then rats to the sheriff that she thinks the guy from the hit and run is probably there. Zane rides along with the police officers, and all things come to a head as the cops show up and confront William Sadler, who's playing Breaker. Things start to heat up as the cops walk in the door.
Evening, Irene. Where is he?
Excuse me, mister. I'd like to have a word with you about the little fender bender on the highway.
Sheriff, better watch it. He's armed.
Oh, told you.
Drop the guns or I'll kill her.
Don't! I said drop your goddamn guns!
I won't do it.
Hell, I won't.
I know this man, Sheriff, and he absolutely will not do it.
Drop the knife. Drop the goddamn knife.
Her blood's on your head, asshole.
Breaker
officer puts down the knife. He's a good person. Mm-hmm. He's not going to fucking murder this person in front of them. Oops.
I was on mute. So ultimately, he drops the gun and drops the knife, and the cops take him into custody. The cops search him for the collector's stolen property in the meantime, and they can't seem to find it.
Collection agency.
It's empty.
Really? That can't be. Well, then I guess that means it's somewhere in the house.
Keep away from me!
Shut up!
Where is it?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't give me that shit! Where is it?
Maybe it's up in his room. I mean, what you guys looking for?
What the hell are we looking for anyway?
A piece of antiquity. A relic. In the shape of a key.
Bob! Search his room.
It's number five.
So they go look for this key, and Deputy Tweedledum busts into Roach and Cordelia's room, where they are having, I don't know if it's, I would call it sex, but he's hooked up to a car batteries that are hooked up to his nipples while she's on top of him. It's a scene. I've never been into this automotive style of foreplay.
Eric, you're telling me you've never been hotwired?
I've never been hotwired. That is a thing I've never done before. Uncle Willie, though, eventually blows up Breaker's spot by saying, I know where he hid it, which is literally under the table where they are sitting right now, kind of stuck up underneath. The collector then urges him to put the key in this little suitcase, not really wanting to touch it. But the cop says, both of the cars were stolen, so you guys are coming with me.
Station, and we're going to sort this shit out.
Sheriff, you're making a big mistake.
It won't be the first time. Sorry for the inconvenience, everyone.
Really, like the man said, if you knew who I was...
We'll find out soon enough.
Why wait?
And then he just fucking punches through...
Give me the keys!
Punches through the cop's whole face. Like,
loved it.
The entirety of his face just gets... fucking punched through. And there's some comical things of him trying to, like, get the fucking guy's head off of his fucking thing.
Like he stepped in some gum.
Yes. And then he goes to, like, throw it at the other cop, and then he wrestles with William Sadler's character, Breaker, for a little bit. But Breaker grabs the key after he gets uncuffed and then presses it to his face, which forces Billy Zane's character, the collector, to jump through the window. And then... boom. Jumps through the window. They go to look
at... the flesh you're printed on! Fuck this cowboy shit!
You fucking ho-dunk-po-dunk well-damn-there, motherfucker!
That part made me laugh so much.
All you have to do is give me the goddamn key! Then we could get on with our lives! Alright. This property... is hereby condemned.
And so he takes his fingernail, which is strangely large and now, and cuts open his palm, and a bunch of green liquid starts to come out. And oddly enough, they actually, to do this fun effect of the glowing liquid, they just broke a bunch of glow sticks up right before the scene and pumped it in there.
Yeah.
And he just starts throwing the droplets of green blood all over the place as these fucking gnarly demons come forth one by one and grow out of the ground. I do like that Billy Zane, like, goes down and, like, kisses one of them when it's all, like, gooey. Like, oh, look at my nice little mwah.
Yeah.
Like that.
So gross. I gotta tell you, looking at that fingernail, I was like, I definitely would never let him finger me.
That's a tough fingering to accept, right?
That is like getting fingered by Wolverine. Just like my womb would be in shreds.
So about 30 demons bubble up from the ground and take shape around the little church there. Chaos ensues as the demons start to jump through, wreaking havoc. Breaker blows a couple away with one of the guns from the cops. He then takes a bit of blood from the key and makes a force field, because apparently there's blood inside of this key. You can blow it, you can pour it out, make a little thing, and it makes an impenetrable force field that the demons cannot go through.
That's why Eric shouldn't be grossed out that I'm on my period.
Yeah.
I have power.
Geraldine then goes to check the back door to see if she can get out of here, but is accosted by a demon. Luckily, Breaker comes in with a fucking knife and ninja stars this thing through the fucking glass window, and then seals the door with more blood, but the stupid demon unwittingly tries to jump through it and turns it into fucking meat on the other side of this thing. Roach then goes to make a run for it with Cordelia. They immediately get scooped up by fucking demons out there. Roach leaves Cordelia behind immediately, but luckily Wally comes to her rescue and is able to shoot the eyes out of one of the demons, and green lightning zaps him in the fucking chest, because apparently you could kill these demons if you shoot them in their green eyes, and it releases their fucking souls from their mortal flesh-bound bodies.
Can I also say that I noticed and loved that some of the demons have earrings, because that's what matters. Like, here's what I don't get about these demons in particular, or demons in any other sort of movie. If you're so powerful, why don't you make yourself better looking?
No, because you want to be scary.
But why are you wearing 14 karat gold hoops? Well, like, I don't understand.
And you're also, you'll hear later, but there's low level demons, there's high level demons. These are low level ones.
Oh, so the ones with earrings that are ugly are basic bitch demons.
Yeah, yeah. The best you could do at low level is look like a Clint Howard. And if your choice is between Clint Howard and just a monster with weird fucking arms, like a burnt Chris Lawrence, that's the best that you can do at this point.
Oh, shout out Chris Lawrence.
Shout out Chris Lawrence.
Shout out
we
to
love
the Crow.
Breaker then serves up the rest of the seals up the rest of the place, closes all the windows with some more blood. Roach then confronts Breaker about the situation.
What the hell are those things? Demons or something?
Worse.
Demons. Oh, that's sweet. That's just fucking sweet. And they want to kill us because of you? Well, who's going to protect us? You? Deputy Bob? Or the headless horseman over there?
Yeah, all right. As long as we stay inside and stay together, we just have to make it through the night.
And that stuff's going to keep them up?
There are only two things we can use against them. The blood that's in this key.
It's blood?
And anything that destroys their eyes. Freeze their tortured souls.
What?
This is crazy.
Deal with it.
No, you deal with it, man. They got no quarrel with us. They just want you and that thing you're carrying. I say we give it to them.
And I say they'll kill you anyway. Or possess you. Or use you to get to the rest of us. Now, like it or not, we stick together.
My cat's outside. I gotta get my cat.
Shut up, you dumb bitch. Leave your cat alone.
No, as a cat lover, I fully understand her plight.
So, he gives him the down low. Breaker then heads upstairs to shore up there. It is important in the first scene that there was a cat that can somehow get in and out of the house, not through one of the doors. So there is another passage in and out of the house that we don't know where it is yet. He then, through the wonder of flashback, we learn that some of the contents, the keys, history goes all the way back to the crucifixion of Christ. It was there, and it looks like a demon is trying to grab it, but it can't grab it, and we don't know why yet. Spoiler alert, might be some of the blood of Christ in there. Can't quite grab it, because it's got Jesus blood in it.
I just wanted to say, I really love the historical accuracy of the crucifixion in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. I do like that weird demon that was there. That rock.
Yeah, Matthew 6:18. Yeah.
So Breaker then sees the cat and wants to make sure it's not possessed and wants to press the key to it, but it runs off. They go down to the basement and find that there is a little draft down there through this very shittily boarded up wall. And I guess it's a mine shaft that they could possibly get out of. Now upstairs, Cordelia is being assaulted by Dickhead Roach. She's upstairs, gets fucking, after he kind of lays the hands on her, she's upstairs getting fascinated by the collector.
Poor Cordelia. Seems downright criminal to treat such a pretty girl that way. Did I say pretty? I meant beautiful. Because you are beautiful, Cordelia. Inside and out. Maybe nobody here can see it, but I sure can. I understand you. I know what you want. I know what you need. Guys like Roach, they think just because they're paying for it that they can treat you like shit. You spend the same money on dinner and a movie, they can call you girlfriend instead of whore. Whore. What a horrible word that is to use on someone who's really just a sad girl who's looking for love.
So he goes on and keeps giving him the sweet talk, and eventually says, just let me in.
Can I just say real quick, having re-listened to this just now, I disagree with Billy Zane that getting called girlfriend is not the same as being a whore, as someone who's been exploited before sexually. No, it'd be nice to be called girlfriend. That's a nice thing if they buy you dinner, and that's nice. Girls, don't listen to Billy Zane.
So Wally then goes up to go check on Cordelia, and she immediately comes on to Wally saying, I always ignored the guys who really loved me, and they start kind of making out, and he admits that he loves her, and they fucking go at it. But downstairs, they can hear the screams of Wally. They head upstairs to see that she is completely possessed, fucking giant monster Cordelia, and is like ripping Wally's eyes out. Breaker can't get the key, grabs the key, but gets it knocked out of his hands. A bunch of magic blood spills on the steps, which will come in handy later. Irene gets her fucking arm ripped off in this scene, which is just brutal. Like, just gets completely at the elbow, just like bent backwards, ripped off like that. And then luckily Breaker's able to grab a shotgun and blow the back of its head off. The eyes are still intact though, mm-hmm. And another shotgun blast eventually releases all of the fucking green energy in a huge ball of lightning, and what can be described as a wonderful scene in this film.
I would agree. I did love that. Yeah.
So after the altercation with Cordelia and Wally, things are back to as normal as they can be. Roach just wants to still give them the key. Breaker says he'll kill him if he tries. They want to head out through the mines in the basement. Breaker thinks that's a bad idea because I've literally just sealed it from all demons. Why don't we just stay here where I've literally wasted the blood of Christ,
right?
Like, to keep us safe for the night. But ultimately, he goes and follows them. Uncle Willie leads his way through the mines because he's just the local drunk that knows how the mines work.
He's like, I used to work on these before I became an alcoholic.
Right. Before I was an alcoholic, I used to be down here all the time. That's how you have gay sex, is to go down here. But Geraldine finds the boy that we saw earlier in the movie down there crying, and she grabs him. But what she doesn't account for are her super demon parents.
The demons are here! Run!
Let's go!
So they all have to go and run out of there. And as they're running, Breaker had sealed the entrance to that. So as they go through, the demons are kind of stuck there. But fucking dumbass Roach goes and grabs a shotgun. He was just like, because his boss was the guy who was one of the demons, and then right. Shoots him in the face. It breaks the seal, and now the demons are in the house at that point. So fucking Roach once again fucking shit up. They run upstairs to where the blood was spilled before, because that's the last barrier where they can be safe, is upstairs. So they get up to that point, and in another flashback, we go back to World War I, where we see how Breaker got the key by a war buddy of his was shooting a fucking German who was also one of these fucking monsters, and he then explains how everything happened back in the day and how he came in possession of the key.
All right. You want to know what's going on? Shall I tell you? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
You're talking Genesis. That beginning?
And the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep. But the darkness wasn't empty. It was full of creatures, full of demons. And they had seven keys. Formed into a circle. focus the power of the cosmos into their hands. Until God stepped forth and said, let there be light. And there was light. And he scattered the demons. And he scattered the keys. All across the universe. Now we fast forward about 2 or 3 million millennia. Now the demons are back. They got 6 of the keys. And one day they find the 7th key here on Earth. Now to save it, God filled it with the blood of a carpenter who was being crucified by the Romans. And he gave it to a thief named Sirach.
The blood inside? Is that?
Some of it. Yeah.
It's just some Jesus blood I carry around.
It gets used, you see. Sirach had to refill it. Bad neck wound. Talon. Caught the artery here. Most of what's in here now belonged to a soldier named Dickerson. Gave it to me in France, August 23rd, 1917.
Dickerson, by the way, is a shout out to the director of this film, Ernest Dickerson. So just a little throw that out
some
there.
Some great last names in here.
Yeah.
Funny how you remember the big dates in it.
Jeez.
I like how he says, funny you remember the big dates. Oh, World War One? Did you remember World War One? That's good. I'm glad you remember the whole world at war.
I don't remember when my child was born, but I remember the day I got the blood from this soldier.
So it's filled up with that. So these people are demon knights. They're the holders of the key, and he is the current demon knight. And it is currently filled with the blood of the last demon knight, which is currently on low supply. Spoiler alert, maybe he's going to have to fill it up before the end of this movie. So Roach goes up to him and says, hey man, Breaker, you got balls. But while he's doing that, actually grabs the key out of his bag. What a fucking dick. They then go look for Danny, who's missing upstairs. What a fucking shit. But while Geraldine is looking around for Danny, she then gets visited by the collector.
Do me a favor. Don't scream. Just hear what I've got to say. And then scream.
I put on some R&B because you're black. Don't worry.
I made a note that says, yeah, man, are we pandering?
You've got so much to live for, and yet where the hell are you?
Do you like TLC?
You're stuck in this house. You're stuck in this town. Because
I put some on.
There's a great big world out there, Jeremy.
Whole scene.
You should travel.
So this whole scene is like, I once watched BET.
So, sweet Jada Pinkett Smith is getting fascinated by the devil, and then it turns after he shows him, he's like, Breaker's not going to get you out of this, and it's a pretty cool scene of like demons just ripping Breaker's body apart, and it's a pretty cool special effect up on the wall.
It's pretty damn cool, I agree.
And she ultimately has a choice and chooses no, which is important because there's going to have to be a new demon night after tonight, it's looking like, because the stars are all coming into alignment on his hand. Somebody else needs to go carry the mantle. It's possible Geraldine could be one.
I also have to say, shout outs to this movie for being very woke for this time period, because really, they were way ahead of the times for demonizing white people.
Yes, yes, it is true. That is true. They finally find the kid, and pretty cool scene. We see that. We then find the kid, and they get attacked. Next, Willie gets fascinated by a bunch of topless women at like a tiki bar. I like that. Like, oh, you could travel the world. Willie's dream is just topless women at a tiki bar, which is pretty cool.
I also made a note that said, oh yeah, again, in case I forgot, there's a reason Eric likes this movie.
Yes, there's a lot of topless scenes. The collector then hands him a big drink because he's playing the bartender. He's like, hey, go Uncle Willie, have one of these. And it just makes this thing. It was like, he's got fucking Uncle Willie now under his control. Luckily, upstairs, they find a bunch of fucking guns and grenades that were Wally's because he got fired from the Postal Service. And to impress Irene, he was going to go kill everyone at the post office.
I got it. tell you, like, the thought process makes a lot of sense, because if any guy actually ever threatened to, like, blow up his former employer, I would definitely say yes if he asked me out.
I do like the fact that back in the day, we just called mass shootings going postal, because it was just postal workers, and now postal workers are like, no, this is a pretty sweet job. Now everyone's going postal. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. We've come a long way since the 1995.
Yeah, we've deviated.
And now that they have at least a little bit more arms and some a couple more weapons, Uncle Willie fucking goes berserk and starts attacking. Geraldine is faced with a tough decision to do the right thing here, either help Uncle Willie or help Breaker. Luckily, she does do the right thing. While this is all going down, this fight with Uncle Willie, Billy Zane then goes and try to cut a deal with Irene, whose arm is chopped off. He brings her arm up on a silver platter in front of her and...
Hello, I'm your waiter, Skip. Our special today is a lovely poached appendage. Market price, of course. For starters, I recommend the finger food. Want your arm back, Irene? I can make it happen.
And then she lifts her stub up.
Yes. No, that's me giving you the finger, asshole.
I did love that.
I do like that she gives him the finger with just her nub. That was fun.
That's good.
So, meanwhile, while this is all going down, there's an attack. They're trying to kill Uncle Willie. Irene is getting fascinated. Roach is nowhere to be found because he's at the fucking seal at the top of the steps cutting a deal with the fucking demons. Breaker is able to cut off Willie's head, but Willie is still moving around because we haven't destroyed the eyes, so he's just getting beat up by this fucking torso and legs. The body still continues to attack, but luckily the kid grabs the fucking head and then slams it on Antlers. And then, you know, ends Uncle Willie's life.
Yeah.
But downstairs, the deal is almost done between Roach and the Collector.
You kill me. You have my word. I mean, frankly, we've been counting on you, haven't we? The world needs more people like you, Mr. Roach.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Of course, you don't mind if we kill the others, do you?
Hey, if it makes you feel good, do it.
If it makes you feel good, do it. Exactly. First things first, of course.
And he produces a sponge from his mouth, which was actually an idea by Billy Zane. He's like, it would be awesome if, like, I just had a sponge that popped out of my mouth real quick there. So they added that into the movie. It was a good little piece of improv that turned into a special effects and probably took a half day to create.
Yeah.
So he wipes up the blood so that they can cross and get up there, and then puts the key into Billy Zane's hands.
He's a bossy asshole.
Isn't he, though?
And as he walks out, he gets, thinks he's scot-free. The collector turns back down.
You know, you ain't such a bad fella. You aren't so bad yourself.
Oh, pleasure doing business with you, Mr. Roach.
Well, you know this hell on earth business? Big fucking deal. I got hemorrhoids.
My asshole bleeds occasionally. Who cares about hell on earth?
Vaya con Dios.
And a vaya con diablos to you too, sir. Oh, Roach, there's just one more thing I forgot to mention. I lied.
Oh, and he gets fucking violently ripped apart.
Which I loved. But yeah, it's a little weird for him to be like, hemorrhoids, hell on earth can't be that bad. I'm like, sir, you will never give birth to a child.
But as soon as he comes up, Breaker shoots the collector through the eye with a bow and arrow and he goes, shit, that sucks, and falls over, dropping the case, so they have the key again. The gang then heads upstairs to the attic. Irene stays below and ends up blowing herself up with Deputy Helpful with all the grenades, essentially hopefully saving the day for the folks that are left, which is just Danny, Breaker, and Geraldine. Now, Geraldine is the only possible person that could be a Demon Knight at this point. Now, it's possible that Deputy deputy helpful, and Irene could have also been the Demon Knight, because it's implied that the deputy was at one time fascinated, but he decided to not help the collector and arrest him. So right. He started to turn down the collector. So had Irene.
Right.
So it's worth saying that one of them could also have been the Demon Knight, but instead they made the ultimate sacrifice here.
Well, but I mean, I feel like from the very beginning of the film, we were always being pushed towards.
Yeah.
Like, we were always being led to be who it was going to be.
So, Breaker then goes to go seal up one of the windows, but instead of putting it on his hand, he puts it on her hand. She goes, gross, and then touches it to the window, and, you know, oh my God, she got the fucking magic touch. She can be the next Demon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Danny, though, while this is all happening, is reading none other than a Tales from the Crypt comic book and is being fascinated from the pages of that. Geraldine kicks Danny fucking hops up, and he's a fucking gnarly looking monster with like a giant mouth. She ends up fucking ripping Breaker apart during this scene, and like ripping open his torso. R.I.P. William Sadler and Breaker's character here. And Geraldine grabs the rafters and then kicks Danny through the sealed window, turning him into fucking Sloppy Joe on the other side. But with Breaker's dying breath, he performs the magic ritual that makes her the next Demon Knight.
Breaker, look, I can't do this, all right? I'm not the right type of person for this shit.
I tried to seduce you, didn't I?
I tried.
You're exactly the right kind of person. Give me your hand.
I can't, break.
You're still down there. Come on.
So he's able to do that. A big transfer of power happens. Breaker dies. And she is now the new Demon Knight, as he says, watch your back. Watch your back, Geraldine. You best. That's the only thing I can tell you. If you're a Demon Knight, you got to watch your own back.
Yeah, really helpful and insightful last words.
So as he dies, all the seals within the house come undone, and the collector enters to find Breaker's body. He peers around looking for the key and can't find it. Geraldine eventually reveals herself completely covered in blood.
An exquisite paint, all covered with blood. That's right.
It's not my blood.
Bitch.
So she's covered in Breaker's blood, which makes it all just a giant seal around her, which is a fun little caveat that she's just like, oh, look at all this blood. I'm just going to make myself invincible real quick.
Which I have to say, I'm usually covered in blood, and no man ever calls me exquisite.
That is, yeah, you're exquisite right now. She is covered in blood.
Am I really? I'm sorry for the smell, but
she's attracting bears, but demons nowhere to be found. So.
Well, you said I attract bears. That's why you're down here, Eric.
I do also think it's funny when the collector touches her, he decides to leave by basically like Fred Flintstoning himself down like the fucking attics. And I was like, which I found very, very hilarious.
Yeah.
She starts slowly making her way down the stairs, but gets nabbed up by the collector with a shower curtain. He wraps it around her and then rinses her off in the shower, pours the rest of the blood out of the key. She takes the last sip and puts it to her lips and then holds it in her mouth. So she's just holding a big old mouth of blood that is her last shot here. She then takes the key and jabs him in the eye. But he lets her know that only works on low-level demons, and that really fucking hurt.
But here's my question, Eric. If holding in a drop of blood in your mouth protects you from demons, what am I protected from when I have a load of jizz in my mouth?
Having children. That's the only thing you're protected from.
You
right
mean
there.
Little demons.
Yes, yeah. It protects you from the worst demons. That's it. So, but this isn't enough for the collector to just kill her at this point. She's not covered in blood. He doesn't know that she has a mouthful of fucking Breaker blood in her mouth. So he tries to seduce her and does this weird dance sequence where at one point she's on the ground and he has a fire dick that comes out. It's a fun scene.
He's a fire crotch.
But he does have the eyes for Geraldine just a little bit.
Geraldine,
Jolene, I'm going to say something to you I haven't said to anyone. Jolene, I love you. Jolene, I love you. Jolene, do you think you could ever find it in your heart to possibly me? Didn't think so. All right, let's... fuck it. You will die, but at least we'll be together forever. If I can't have your soul, I'm gonna take your heart.
And she looks him in the face, spits all the blood into his face, which he does not like. Apparently that hurts really bad. You just spit Drano into my eyes. God damn it.
It's a solid
that
move.
That hurts. And we see that he turns into like a giant fucking winged demon and eventually just explodes, which is pretty badass. It blows out all the windows on the place with huge fireballs. Geraldine is still somehow unscathed after all of this.
I know. She's magic.
We then see that Geraldine has saved the day. She's the new Demon Knight. She's got a full fucking cask of blood again in her key, starting out at her trail as a protector of the key. She then hops on the bus and then puts a little seal on the bus to make sure no demons can get on, because nobody likes to ride fucking mass transit with a fucking devil. The next stop, though, somebody goes to get on and we see there is a new demon that is in pursuit of her, and luckily they are diverse and very black.
It's okay. I'll wait for the next one.
He decides to take the next one because he just can't cross the seal.
I love that we needed a black demon for a black demon night.
It's the 90s. It's a very progressive movie.
But I mean, is it 90s or is this like segregation?
Yeah, I don't know. I believe it's the 90s. You know, it's definitely modern times for 1995.
But can we also talk about they also picked a bus?
Yeah. I do like that as he's walking off, he's whistling the Tales from the Crypt song. And that is the end of that. Next, we see the Crypt Keeper's hand to bring in the epilogue of the movie. The Crypt Keeper's hand reaches up and grabs something and then starts dragging it down a ridiculously long hole. We got to see it. And you'll see remnants of Jimmy Hoffa that they pass at one part, which, oddly enough, Jimmy Hoffa's body obviously disappeared. The famous Teamster from the 1950s or 60s, I believe. Very famous for the movie The Irishman, if you've never seen it. It is depicted there, the life and times of Jimmy Hoffa, played by Robert De Niro, and Jimmy Hoffa is actually played by Al Pacino. Look at me, I got a big dick. She's got a great ass, and I'm a Teamster, and I messed with the mob and disappeared. But at the end, the Crypt Keeper gets to finally head to the red carpet for the premiere of Demon Knight.
I love Scar Nations. You'll be happy to know, kiddies, that Geraldine lived happily ever after. In fact, I even got a ghost card from her. She's traveling the world and having a fabulous time. As for me, I'm afraid I've got to hurry. Tonight's our big screamier.
So as the Crypt Keeper creepily walks down a giant red carpet for the premiere of Demon Knight, he sees there's a giant guillotine waiting for him there.
They're trying to tell me something. Well, what do you know? I asked for Final Cut, and I got it! Now that's entertainment!
And ends with the comical scene of the Crypt Keeper's head getting cut off, which brings us to an end of Demon Knight, a 1995 classic, one of my favorite films. Ashley, what are your final thoughts on Demon Knight?
I actually really liked it. I can see why this is one of Eric's favorites. You know, some parts may be shitty, but hey, I got to see a bunch of titties.
Yeah, and I mean, that's all you ever really want is some tits, some gore, some violence, and yeah. Thomas Hayden Church walking around with a deep baritone and toned chest.
Hot and squishy.
Ruining couches all across America in 95, all the way up until 2020. So
this is not a nice couch. Don't even act like you're mad.
That is from Value City. You will respect it.
Well, you're going to have a hard time. Is this micro suede? It's going to be a difficult time, I'm just saying.
I do love this movie, Demon Knight. I remember it. It wasn't the first horror movie I saw. It was probably like the second or third one I actually got to see in the movies as a young sixth to eighth grader, somewhere around there. I did enjoy the fuck out of this movie. Watched it multiple times, and I'm glad I got to relive it tonight. I will say this type of movie is one of those movies that I call, and I shared it with on our Facebook page. You can go look at it. I call it my top four movies where it's the last stand type movies. These are movies like Dust Till Dawn, Dawn of the Dead, Legion, and somebody pointed out, a listener of the show pointed out, also 30 Days of Night technically counts.
I was just about to bring it up, but I was like, I won't be that person.
It's like that type of movie where it happens in like a single night. You just have to survive till morning against a horde of monsters. Feast is another one that we've done on the show.
Yeah.
That's very similar. I just love these type of movies where mm-hmm. it's like, it's pretty much like the story of the Alamo, but it with monsters. And
yeah.
I dig that. And, yeah. and this is one of those, and it holds a fond place in my heart just for that.
I get that.
Man, I didn't cue up music for the ending, so you're going to have to riff for a second while I do that.
Oh my goodness.
Now, Ashley, where can people find you at, love?
You can always find me online on social media at Ashley Pontius Laughs. I think these will have passed with the release date of this episode, but I am doing a comedy show on the 17th out of Georgia for the voting down there to raise awareness for that. I'll be doing a Zoom show on the 18th and dinner with schmucks on the 19th.
Oh, Dinner with Schmucks. That sounds fun. What is that about?
Dinner with Schmucks. Shout out to the team there. It's a podcast. We're going to be doing a live episode that will come out December 23rd.
Okay. Is Chris Restivo going to be on it, or Tom Myers, or anybody?
No. That's so funny. Someone contain me. It is my good friends out of Scranton, PA, that I've been a guest on their podcast before. So we're doing a socially distanced holiday end of year wrap up.
Okay, that rocks. Yeah. Hell yeah. And we have some big things coming on the horizon. Obviously, you guys already know what next week's episode is going to be. We talked about it at the beginning. It's going to be The Other. But I might have a big guest, a special effects guru who's responsible for the special effects in multiple movies that we have done. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Again, you can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. That's Eric with a K, Comedy with a C. The Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month. That's hosted by The Auto Bar and Michael Quindlin and Kimberly Callahan, former guest host of the show. While you're there, go ahead and check out our merch, man. We got fucking cool-ass t-shirts that you can go pick up. We get cents on the dollar every time you buy one. So we'd love it if you wore some of our gear. You love it. And you know what? Just tell a friend about the show. Word of mouth goes a long way in our business. Oh, shit. And there's no Jeremy. Ashley, take us out.
I'm Robert Lozier.